will be university CUs will be trying to reach out to their fellow students. It's a really important time. It's in between exams, and I was with the Glasgow Cali students on Thursday night there. They're preparing for this coming week and trying to build up the courage to ask their friends to come along to events. It's a key evangelism ground, and God could do wonderful things. So please pray right across Scotland for the universities. In my case, I'll be up with Robert Gordon doing events in the university itself during the day. And at night time, they're hiring venues and just bringing students together to hear the gospel. So appreciate your prayers for that. Revelation 13, the beginning of verse 1, and we'll read the first 10 verses just for now. Then I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. It had 7 heads and 10 horns, and 10 horns, 10 crowns on its horns. And written on each head were names that blasphemed God. The beast looked like a leopard, but it had the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave the beast his own power and throne and great authority. And I saw one of the heads of the beast seemed to be wounded beyond recovery, but the fatal wound was healed. The whole world marveled at this miracle and gave allegiance to the beast. They worshipped the dragon for giving the beast such power, and they also worshipped the beast, who is as great as the beast, they exclaimed. Who is able to fight against him? Then the beast was allowed to speak great blasphemies against God, and he was given authority to do whatever he wanted to for 42 months. And he spoke terrible words of blasphemy against God, slandering his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. And the beast was allowed to wage war against God's holy people and to conquer them. And he was given authority to rule over every tribe and people and language and nation. And all the people who belong to this world worshipped the beast. They are the ones whose names were not written in the book of life that belongs to the Lamb who was slaughtered before the world was made. Anyone who hears, has ears to hear, should listen and understand. And anyone who is destined for prison will be taken to prison. Anyone destined to die by the sword will die by the sword. This means that God's holy people must endure persecution patiently and remain faithful. That's all I'm going to read just for now. You'll know by now that Revelation is a book that looks to the future, but it also at the same time describes the great battle that has gone on since the dawn of time between, on the one hand, God and all the forces of holiness and good, and on the other hand, the devil himself, who has always been the opponent of God ever since the book of Genesis. And you'll know that all of this will culminate in the future in a great battle where finally, Christ will have the victory. And we know that because the Revelation tells us that. But when we're sitting here in chapter 13, looking forward to what will come, but reflecting back on what has been, we still need to bear in mind that this is what we call apocalyptic literature, just like Daniel is. It's written in code, often because as John was writing this letter on the Isle of Patmos, he didn't want the Romans to know what he's up to. Neither did Daniel in his day. Apocalyptic literature was a form of literature that used lots of graphic imagery, which would convey a particular point, but would disguise the truth from those who were against them. And two things need to be remembered as we come to this chapter. Number one, everything is metaphorical, highly metaphorical. And because it's a metaphor, it's important that we think about the general lesson that's being communicated rather than trying to be very specific and almost nitpick. It's a bit like an impressionist painting. My wife's into her painting. She goes to an art class that we have at the Glow Center. It's a way of reaching other women for Christ. And impressionism doesn't give you that fine detail like a photograph would be. It gives you an impression. That is how apocalyptic literature works. That's how these metaphors work. And secondly, of course, we will be tempted, obviously we'll be tempted, to guess who all these characters are. The 666, for example, mentioned at the end of this chapter, in the very last verse. Who is the 666? Spoiler alert, there have been dozens of attempts over the years. In Northern Ireland, where my accent comes from, everything from the Pope to Ian Paisley, and all in between. In other countries, all kinds of other people. I've been in Ukraine many times, and I've been in Ukrainian churches where they would have perceived Putin and before him Stalin to be the 666. Now, there's a great temptation to do that, but please don't be tempted. The whole point of this is not to give you a specific identifier. That's not the point of apocalyptic literature. But it's to give you a general idea of what's going on so we can be forewarned about what some of us might have to face. And that is the serious, serious business of chapter 13. Now, two monsters emerge here. And the first comes up out of the sea. And it is frankly a grotesque image. I was thinking of doing a PowerPoint and getting a picture. And I was using Google and ChatGPT and all the rest of it. ChatGPT is a wee bit better. But even so, doing justice to this pretty awful description is hard pictorially. But it's got 7 heads, 10 horns. It has a leopard's body, but the feet of a bear and the mouth of a lion. Now, this beast that comes out of the sea actually appears in chapter 11. You've already come across this beast before. But now we have a greater description. And the writer is trying to give us a bit more detail as to what this guy is going to be doing. But the key thing is this, that the person or the being behind this first beast is the dragon himself, the devil. So this isn't just an ugly monster. And by the way, some folk have asked the question, why is this particular monster been given all of these different kind of animal body parts? What's that all about? Is it just to scare us, to frighten us? Actually, it's a bit more subtle than that. I don't know if any of you have ever been on safari. When I took my family to Tanzania in 2008 for a year to do some mission work there, we managed to go on a safari. And there is nothing as primeval as sitting in a jeep watching a leopard or a lioness slowly working its way towards an unsuspecting wild pig and then pouncing. The great distinction between the animal world and humans is our conscience. Altogether different. We are not just animals as human beings. We know the difference between right and wrong, which is why on the Serengeti, when a lion attacks a gazelle and tears it to pieces, it doesn't go on trial for murder, because that's just how nature works. Animals behave like that. But if I were to kill one of you, it would be an entirely different matter. We have a conscience. We know the difference between right and wrong, and we act according to that because we are human. Here's a monster which composes or is composed of the bodies of some of the most vicious and brutal and savage animals you can imagine. I've seen a lion in action, and a bear, and a leopard. I've seen them all hunting. It is a frightening and ferocious scene, and that's the image here. This monster really is a monster that we ought to be terrified of. And worse still, it's got demonic power, because the dragon is giving great power to this monster. This is not just an ugly, brutal being or force of nature. This is the epitome of evil. Something deeply and profoundly sinister. Now, interesting that on these heads, you've got names written, and those names, we are told again and again, they blaspheme God. Now, within the language, there's a little bit of subtlety, because the actual term blaspheme that's used in Revelation 13 is the term to slander or to accuse. Now, rhetorical question here. Who is referred to in the Bible as the accuser? You know who it is? The devil himself. This is the force of evil itself, because the devil is using this beast not just to gain supremacy in the world, future event, not just that, but to utterly oppose God, to blaspheme God, and to do everything in his power to try to belittle God. That's the intention. This is pure demonic activity, but demonic activity in the form of an actual person, the beast. Now, we asked the question, has this kind of symbolism ever been used before in the Bible? And the answer to that is yes. If you go all the way back to Daniel chapter 7, you've got a beast there in Daniel 7, not identical to this beast, but there are lots and lots of similarities. For example, in the Daniel 7 monster, leopard, bear, and lion are all included for the same reasons. Both these beasts, the beast of Daniel 7, the beast of Revelation 13, they are both looking for worldwide domination. Both these beasts have seven heads. Now, the one in Daniel, it's the composite of all the beasts in that picture have seven heads. This one beast has the seven heads. They both blaspheme God. They're both anti-God, deliberately anti-God. They both oppose God's people and persecute God's people. Their authority is limited. Notice the number of weeks are mentioned here. This beast has tremendous power and authority, but it's only for a limited period of time. Verse 5, 42 months. Now, is it literal 42 months? No idea. No idea. But that's not the point anyway. The point is that while this is a terribly frightening beast, an awful monster, it's confined. And it's only allowed to do what it does because God allows it to do what it does. It's limited, same as the beast in Daniel 7. And of course, both these beasts, the one in Revelation 13 and the one in Daniel 7, they'll both be destroyed. Both defeated. Now, is this important? Well, the answer is yes, it's massively important. Because what the writer is trying to do, while he is looking forward to an individual coming, an antichrist coming, at some point in our future, he's at one and the same time saying, look, this is nothing new, folks. You have always lived in a world where the forces of evil have been working and working very hard. That battle has raged since the very beginning of time. And the evil of demonic power has manifested itself frequently in human history. And so, yes, there'll be a future character coming, but there have been lots of characters over the years. There's a very real sense in which 666 has existed dozens of times in human history, even though it'll exist in the future as well. If you go back to John's time himself, Caligula, Nero, Domitian, actually, Christians debated in the first century, which of those guys is the actual 666? Caligula was awful, Nero was appalling, Domitian was fearsome. Actually, they all were, because they all opposed God. They all blasphemed God. They all persecuted Christians en masse. And even before then, you go all the way back to Nimrod, who violently opposed God and his people. Or ancient Egypt, 400 years of slavery, was that pleasant for God's people? Or Babylon, captivity, brutality? And then we think more recently of people like Attila the Hun, Ivan the Terrible, Stalin, Hitler, Vladimir Putin, I threw him in that category as well. Pol Pot, think of the killing fields of Cambodia where not only Christians, but any intellectual was put to death under that brutal, horrific regime. Actually, wearing a pair of glasses was enough to get you killed under Pol Pot. I mean, these were all monsters. And who inspired them? All the work of the devil. Human history has been littered with awful atrocities. And we can clearly see the devil at work. Clearly. And the commonality is not just that dominion and power and brutality and cruelty, But the opposing of God's people, under any of those names I've mentioned, you think of the number of believers who were martyred for their faith in Jesus Christ. It's always been. But look at verse 2 of chapter 13. And the dragon gave the beast his own power and throne and great authority. Now, we read that in a single few seconds, but it's an awful thought. That if you think about all that has happened in the past, think of that collection of violence and brutality and persecution and wickedness throughout human history. That's only the starter course. The main course is yet to come. And there will arise a person that Paul in Thessalonians describes as the man of lawlessness. That's an intriguing title, the man of lawlessness. Whose law? Well, God's law. He utterly opposes everything that God stands for. And this individual will be more brutal, more powerful, more sinister, more evil than everything else before. Can you imagine that? How awful that will be. And then verse 3, I saw one of the heads of the beast seemed to be wounded beyond recovery, but the fatal wound was healed, and the whole world marveled at this miracle and gave allegiance to the beast. Now, that's a really interesting statement. Is it a literal wound? I think not. There's something else very clever and subtle going on here. What this beast is doing is performing some spectacular feat of being wounded and being healed. And this spectacular feat, whether it's literal or otherwise, is generating worship and adulation from the world's population. Now, I think what's happening here in chapter 13 is a parody. And it's a parody of chapter 5. It's very subtle, very clever. Parody of chapter 5. Because what happens in chapter 5? You've got the lamb. And how is the lamb described? The lamb that was slain. But this lamb isn't dead, because he's been resurrected. And he stands in front of the elders and the crowds, and they sing praises to him. Why? Why do we praise Christ? Because he conquered death. And he's our risen Savior. When it comes to Easter time, Christians across the world will worship Jesus because he's dead. He was dead, but he's alive again, and he reigns today. There's a parody going on here. What this beast is trying to do is take that position of the Christ. Hence the Antichrist. If he can dethrone Christ and take the attention and the worship that's due to Christ, that's his whole purpose. Which is exactly what happens in verse 4. They worshipped the dragon that gave the beast its power, and they also worshipped the beast. And they said, and look at these words very carefully, who is as great as the beast, they claimed? Who is able to fight against him? Now, what does that remind you of? Well, actually, it reminds me of lots of passages of worship in the Old Testament, for example. Exodus 15, who is like you amongst the gods, O Lord? Glorious in holiness, awesome in power, performing great wonders. Now, we have been worshiping God since the dawn of time as faithful human beings who recognize who God is. And we worship Christ for all the reasons that we worship Christ for. Here's this beast trying to subvert that and claim that he is the Christ. And when we get down to the very last verse, that 666, you'll see why this is so important. He's trying to subvert Christ and draw worship to himself. Now, that's the oldest trick in the book. Why was Lucifer ultimately cast out of heaven? Why? It's because he thought of himself as greater than God. The creature tried to overtake the creator. This isn't new. That was even before the fall of humanity. We don't know when that fall happened. But it happened certainly before Adam and Eve fell. So Adam and Eve's sin wasn't the first sin. Now, it's when sin entered into the human race. People made in God's image. It wasn't the first sin. The first sin was Lucifer himself, who tried to take the place of God, which was illegitimate for him to do. And verse 5, that invective, the beast was allowed to speak great blasphemies against God. That term allowed to is quite interesting, isn't it? The devil will continue to blaspheme God. And we see it in our everyday culture with the degradation of us as human beings. We can see that blasphemy against God. It's only for a time. And you might in your workplace feel outnumbered and feel under pressure when it comes to Pride Month, for example. You don't want to have a pride flag or a pride sticker in your computer, and you get brain damage from your employer for wanting to stand out. And it feels so, it's only for a time. You're actually on the right side of history, because this blasphemy will not go on forever. Time is limited. Nevertheless, he blasphemes God, because the Antichrist wants to usurp God's rightful place, as the devil has always done. And verse 7, wage war against God's people. That's been a commonality with all of the evil regimes in history, that God's people have suffered. It's been part of life. It is part of life. While we live in comparative safety here in Scotland, there are many Christians who woke up this morning throughout the world not knowing if this will be their last day on earth, such as the persecution that they have to face. But when we come to verse 8, we have a dramatic, dramatic statement here. And this is where we are asked to make a choice. And as believers, we need to continue to make that choice. And all the people who belong to the world worship the beast. They're persuaded by his trickery. But they are the ones whose names are not written in the book of life. It belongs to the Lamb, who was slaughtered before the world was made. And then you have that curious bit of poetry. Anyone who has ears to hear, let them understand. If anyone is destined for prison, in China today, in Korea today, many in Iran today, many believers in prison. I read a thing in the paper just this morning. I get the paper on my phone. And it was saying that in Iran, currently, Christians are being scapegoated for the insurrection that was taking place. The government is trying to deflect from themselves, although there's another student protest today in Iran, but they are blaming the Christians. Does that sound familiar? Sounds awful like Nero, all the way back 2,000 years ago, as he blamed the Christians for the fire of Rome, which he himself probably caused. Anyone destined to die by the sword will die by the sword. This means, because that poem in verses 9 and 10 is about us, this means God's holy people must endure persecution patiently and remain faithful. Now, this is the challenge. This is why chapter 13 is so important for us. We don't know when some of these events will unfold. We do know what it looks like, because we've had a whole history in human history of antichrist-like behavior in government after government after government. But what will happen in the future will be worse again. Worse again. How do you prepare for that? Seems to me the only way to prepare is to be determined in our minds that come what may, we'll remain faithful. That's what we do. We are on the right side of history. We are. And the going may get very tough, but we must patiently endure persecution and remain faithful. It's a call to us. No matter what happens, remain faithful to Christ. Now, once we have that first beast, we come to a second. But before we come to the second, let me just make the point that this is being expressed in almost religious terms. I think that's quite clever. Much of future persecution will come from false religion. It already is. Some of the most intolerant cultures in the world are, for example, Islamic majority countries, where Christians receive fearsome treatment. And it's just the norm. Or China or Korea, North Korea, whose government set themselves up virtually as deities. Absolute power and authority as a state. Christians suffer there too. And in the woke West, we don't suffer that kind of persecution, but think of the cultural opposition that we receive. It's very real. Very real. All you have to do is speak out on an issue and all hell itself descends on you. And depending on what career you've chosen, your career could be at an end. I've had one or two friends in the political realm who have tried to stand up for Christ, and they've done the right thing, and their careers have finished. They knew their careers would be at an end, because as soon as you stand for righteousness, you're in trouble. Now, after the first beast comes the second beast, and the second beast emerges not so much from the sea, but from the earth. And if it's bad enough, having one beast, having two is even worse. Now, this second beast will be referred to later on in three different passages later on in Revelation as the false prophet. And I'm reminded, I was back in May, I was in Poland at a conference that I go to every year, the leadership conference, European leadership conference. And I decided to take a morning off from the teaching I was doing to visit Auschwitz. It was a life-changing experience, an astonishing place to be, an awful, awful place to be. A million people died in that camp. And many Germans knew very early on that Hitler was profoundly anti-Jewish and anti-Gypsy as well, anti lots of things, and that his regime would be brutal. Yet somehow, remarkably, large swathes of the population got behind the whole Nazi campaign. And the person responsible for much of that was Joseph Goebbels, Minister for Propaganda, who developed the whole kind of Hitler Führer myth, which almost became a religious thing. When they saluted Hitler, it was virtually a spiritual experience. The Nuremberg rallies, that was church. And Joseph Goebbels did an outstanding job of deception and communication to get a whole country behind Hitler. Same kind of thing happening here. This is what the second beast is. The second beast is there to promote the first beast. Verse 12, and he required all the earth and its people to worship the first beast whose fatal wound had been healed. And when we read from verses 13 to 15, I can't go into any detail because time is almost up. It's astonishing the clever manipulation and communication that is taking place. You've got apparent miracles, flashing fire from the sky while everybody was watching miracles he's allowed to perform, verse 14. And look at verse 15. He was permitted to give life to this statue that could speak, a huge statue. Now, where else do you read about statues in the Old Testament? Well, it reminds you of the book of Daniel again, doesn't it? Where the king builds this gigantic statue and brings people out to worship the statue. And as that was done, you had that powerful music being played. It's interesting how dictators use imagery and music and emotion as part of their political shtick. Happened back in Daniel's day. That's what's happening here. Impressive statues. Music. Hitler used Wagner. All of that was important in the Nuremberg rallies. And the entire world is deluded, deceived by the second beast into following the first beast. And you think, well, that seems a bit of a stretch. Isn't the whole world being deceived? Well, not really. Not really. I mean, if you think of contemporary means of communication, Facebook alone, anyone use Facebook? Facebook alone has 3 billion active users. And one challenge that people like Donald Trump and Keir Starmer have, or any political leader, is you no longer wait up for the 10 o'clock news on ITV or BBC. That's old school. You now have 24-hour news and podcasts and constant journalism. And one of the problems that lots of politicians have is you can't have a fresh story every day, and you can't even sound sensible every day. But they've got microphones forced into their face at all times. That's our contemporary world. Do you think with that kind of technology it'll be difficult to deceive people and to communicate to the entire world? No, it won't be. We can already communicate to the entire world. Something happens in Iran or Azerbaijan or India, we hear about it instantly. We have live news feeds. My newspaper, which I get on my phone, updates every few minutes. So I get stories in the newspaper throughout the day. And then I think of the power of AI. I was going to bring you some photographs that we put together in Glow of me standing in football stadiums and places like that. It's all AI created. I never was in that football stadium with a huge crowd as I was speaking to them. It's all AI. It's incredibly clever. We've even got a song written about me going Glow teams and doing evangelism. And the singer is brilliant, but it's all false. It's all AI. In fact, we use one of our AI songs on one of our social media posts to promote mission and that kind of stuff. And somebody phoned me up to say, who is that rock band? They were brilliant. I'd like to book them. They don't exist. It's AI. AI has incredible capability for hallucinations and deep fakes. I saw one the other day. It was a Trump speech. The voice sounded great. The lips coordinated. It was definitely him with the hair doing all the rest of it. But you could tell by some of the things he was saying that it was completely false. This isn't futuristic fantasy. This is real now. It's possible right now. Well, here's the frightening bit, and with this I'm going to finish. Verse 16 to 20. He required everyone, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to be given the mark on their right hand or the forehead. And no one could buy or sell anything without that mark, which was either the name of the beast or the number representing the name. Wisdom is needed here. Let the one with understanding solve the meaning of the number of the beast. For it is the number of man, and his number is 666. I'll come to that in just a second. But let me just say again that what's happening here is as the beast consolidates his power, normal commerce will not be possible. Will not be possible unless you get marked in the hand or the forehead. I mean, you've got a digital passport, I presume. The government, the large tech companies already have all your data. If you've been on social media at all, your data's gone. Being sold off, actually. This isn't some fanciful future stuff. Debbie and I, we turned 60 this year, so we thought, we'll go somewhere we've never been before, but it has to be somewhere warm, because Scotland's freezing. So we just began chatting in our living room a couple of weeks back. It was a freezing cold Reich day. I said, why don't we go to the Red Sea, to Egypt? A, it's cheap. B, it's warm. And C, I can go scuba diving in the Red Sea. It's a fabulous place for scuba diving. casual conversation. We got into our cars, me to go to Glow, 10 minutes away, Debbie to go to Morrison's where she works, 20 minutes away. By the time we got to our work, we were already getting adverts on our Facebook sites for holidays in Egypt, resorts in Egypt. How does that happen? Well, it's quite simple. We have an Alexa in the house. It's listening. Everything we say. And I'm told by techie people that if you have an iPhone, even if you switch it off, it's still listening. And all that data and information is communicated to all the tech giants, and suddenly you're getting adverts. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. It's called surveillance capitalism. And notice how much Google have spent this year on AI. It's in the billions they're spending on research because they can take over the world. They literally can. Amazon is incredible. Actually, I think Amazon should buy the post office. I'm waiting on a parcel for weeks now from the post office. Amazon, I can have it that day. Astonishing. And then I think of a place like China where, do you know that in China they're already using social credits? Where every citizen is given a social credit, and it's the most surveilled society on earth. On earth, with hundreds of millions of CCTV cameras. Everything you do is being surveilled. And if you're late with your taxes, or you don't obey all the rules in your business, or you jaywalk across the streets, or you break traffic rules, or whatever, you start losing social credits. It's all centralized, all controlled. And they're already hundreds of thousands of people in China who can't board a plane and they can't take an intercity train because they've lost all their social credits. Just can't do it. It's a form of control. This isn't sci-fi. This is reality right now. And this Antichrist, this 666, such control that normal life is not possible unless you sign the dotted line. What's the 666 all about? Well, Revelation tells us it's simple, and I think it actually is simple. The perfect number is 7. 6 is not perfect. This beast is not the perfect Son of God. He's flawed. He's sinful. He's limited. And we're being told life will get very tough if you continue to follow Christ. It could get extremely tough, and a normal life might come to an end unless you take the mark of the beast. Might come to an end. But if you do decide to take that mark, you're taking that mark from somebody who's imperfect and not worthy of worship. And you're on the wrong side of history. So instead, say no. And it does mean that you could suffer. It does mean that. But it's only for a time. And God gives you grace as you suffer, as he always has done. As Christians and Old Testament saints have suffered in the past, he always has done, given grace. But stay faithful. Stay faithful. Christ is worthy of worship. Let us pray. Father, help us in these dark days and in the darker days to come just to remember that only Christ is worthy of our praise. May we remain faithful, however great the challenge, so that one day we can hear those words in heaven itself, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Help us to keep our eyes on Jesus. For his name's sake. Amen.